Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Follow the Lead, a Christian Leaders podcast powered by Greg Fay Insurance. If you haven't talked to my man Greg, do so today. Go to gregfayinsurance.com. Today on the podcast, a gentleman you need to know by the name of Matt Lesser. Now, Matt's all about equipping leaders through coaching, speaking, training, empowerment, excellence, and his story is wild. I mean, we get into it. We talk about his two latest books. I think some of the things you're really going to pull from my conversation with Matt is his ability to stay resilient, to persistent, to lean in to what God is calling him to. I absolutely appreciate Matt's heart, and I think you will too. So now, without any further ado, here's my conversation with Matt Lesser. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm so excited today to have author, coach, and leader Matthew Lesser, Matthew Q. Lesser. If you're going to Google him, that Q is really important. It's kind of, isn't that funny? Matt, yeah. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Tony. I'm glad to be here. I've been looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah, that cue's important because there's a senator who is constantly running for re-election who takes up a lot of your Google space, isn't there?
There is, and he and I are let's just say not on the same page from many many different perspectives. I'll just leave it at that.
I appreciate the subtle nod there. We're going to dive into different parts of your story. There's a lot to it. But I kind of always like to start from the macro perspective and ask my guests, how would you describe the calling that God has placed on your life?
Oh, my. Well, Tony, it's a great question. And it's been a journey that I've been on now. Really, it started in 2018, even a little before that, but it started in earnest at the end of 18. And it's just continued and intensified over the last 2.5, 3 years. And if I had to sum up my calling, I really believe my calling is to empower, equip, and release leaders to be the best version of who God has called them to be, so that they lead other people to do the same. And it comes out of a heart of, you know, I spent most of my career either owning my own business, building my own business, or helping other people build theirs. And I just got to the point where I really felt like God was saying, I need you to be more available to come alongside leaders. And for whatever reason, that usually means leaders in family-owned businesses, and really support them and give them maybe access to resources that they otherwise maybe can't get access to just because they're not, you know, the big conglomerates have access to pretty much whatever they want. And so that's just where I've kind of fallen in my niche over the last couple of years.
That's fascinating, especially the kind of the inclination to be drawn towards family-owned business, giving your story and how it intertwines with family. You know, at the age of 23, you had a really interesting conversation with your father. I'm kind of wondering if you could tell us a little bit about that and kind of the journey that it set you on after that.
Yeah, no, happy to. I went to college. Grew up in a family business. So my dad bought into a business when I was 4 years old. That's what brought us to Northeast Indiana. And so I grew up, really my only known reality was family business. And so I thought that's what I was supposed to do. And so I went to college, studied business, graduated from college. And it was during college that I really, thought I wanted to pursue my own path. But, when I graduated, I needed a job. So I worked for my dad. And my dad and I didn't see eye to eye on a lot of things, and in many, many ways, oil and water. Mm. No pun intended, even though we were in the oil industry. So I worked for him for about a year and a half, and decided that it was enough. And so went into his office. At the time, I was probably 24. I went into his office. I had been, at this point, been married for about 6 months, 7 months. And I just said, Dad, this isn't working out and one of us needs to go. And it's probably not going to be you because you own the stock. So I'm going to leave, going to go to grad school and just figure out my own path in life. I didn't have a clue, honestly, what I was going to do. And he literally said, sit down. And so I sat down and he said, actually, I'm leaving. And he meant it. And he divorced my mom. They've been married for 29 years. And he moved over 1,000 miles away. And on the way out the door, he basically signed the business over to me.
Wow.
And that should have been a red flag. But I was young. I was motivated. I was arrogant and thought, you know what? This is what I went to school for. I can do this. And so off to the races I went. And the race turned into a massive stumble, if you will, because within 3 months, I discovered why he got out of Dodge so quickly. Three big events, and each one bigger than the one prior. First was trade debt, over $1 million in trade debt. And I didn't show anything on our books. So that was a big one. And in a business that on a good year was making $300,000. So wow. It was a lot of money.
Yeah.
And the second one was we had several convenience stores, and a couple of them had leaking underground storage tanks. They were polluting neighboring properties. EPA, that's a big no-no in the EPA's eyes. And so I had them hot on my tail. And the third one, and this was the biggie, was that withholding tax was not paid for a year. And the IRS will get their money, and they really don't care who did it. They just care about who's sitting in that chair right now, and it was me. And so they were threatening criminal prosecution. So, you know, I was looking at potential jail time for something that I didn't even do. And all of that hit me, and I felt I'd hired my mom to work for me. So she was dealing with the loss of a husband, and my middle brother went with my dad. And so she was mourning the loss basically of a child as well. So I hired my mom. My youngest brother at the time was like 11, 12, and I felt responsible for him, my mom, and my new bride. And I spiraled quickly. And first I stopped sleeping, then anxiety, then panic attacks. I didn't know any of this terminology, Tony. I eventually spiraled into a deep depression and eventually became suicidal. And so I'll stop there for a minute. Do you have any questions or you want to keep going or whatever?
So many questions. There's 1,000 questions. Let's start here. Your dad had a secret family in Florida that was part of this whole thing. He left you in shambles. How's your relationship with your dad today?
Great question. I don't get that question a lot, believe it or not, but I do get it from a handful of people. And you know, your show is all about reclamation, so part of that is all about forgiveness, I'm sure. So we went for about a decade and didn't speak, and it was mostly on my doing. Mm-hmm. At first it was decided by my attorney because my dad was threatening me. He felt like he needed to be paid for the business, even though there was nothing there, and so it was a whole thing. So to protect me, basically my attorneys stepped in and said, you will not have contact with him. If you need to contact him, you can go through me.
Wow.
So that led through a decade of he and I not speaking. And so about a little more than a decade, actually about, 11, almost 12 years, when I sold the business, so the business restarted, and I can talk about that if you want me to, but, when I sold the business, eventually then about 12 years after it restarted, I went into private equity. I actually joined the person who helped me restart the business. And one of the first things that my wife and I got to do was we got to go to Ireland on a company retreat. Man, it was a real tough gig. So we're 10 days just outside of Dublin in this beautiful castle, beautiful surroundings. It was unbelievable. We had never experienced anything like that in our lives. And the theme of the retreat, so it was a retreat where we brought in a bunch of our ministry partners that we had supported financially from all over the world. And we wanted to basically bless them for 7 to 10 days and, you know, all expenses paid. And we just wanted to love on them and let them experience, get away from the field, rest, rejuvenate, refresh. That was the purpose of the retreat. And the theme of the retreat was the fatherhood of God.
Wow.
Had I known the theme of the retreat, Tony, I don't think I would have gone because my view of God at that point was so warped because I viewed it through the lens of my dad. Hmm. And so I viewed God as this judgmental, hypercritical, angry God that did not want a personal relationship with me. It was all about performance. If I performed, I would be loved. If I didn't, I would be condemned. That was my relationship with God. Now, I was a believer. I believe that Jesus died for my sins and rose again and all that stuff, but I didn't necessarily have a personal one-on-one relationship with God because, frankly, I was scared of him. And so, so I went to this retreat, and we're talking about the fatherhood of God. I'm uncomfortable, as you can imagine. I don't want to be there at this point. I can hardly wait to get out. We didn't have sessions all day long. We usually had sessions in the morning, then we played in the afternoons. You know, I was looking for any reason, any way possible to get out of this, but it was a, you know, a brand new job. I didn't want to be absent my first gig. And there was this one session in particular that talked about, okay, how do we appreciate our earthly dads? And it gave us this like worksheet and had a whole bunch of ideas on, you know, did your dad do this or this, 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 this? I refused to do the exercise. I just didn't do it. A man was in the room who was my pastor when I was a kid, and he knew my dad personally. And he pulled me aside after that. And he said, can I see the worksheet that you did? And I said, nope. And he said, why? And I said, because I didn't do it. And he said, I thought so. And he sat me down in a loving way. It was not, you know, I didn't feel coerced. I didn't feel forced to. But he sat me down and he walked through scripture with me in a way that helped me start to see God as separate from my dad. And as truly the loving, caring father that I believe that he is today. And that began a journey for me. It set me on a journey that by the time I got back, about a month after I got back from that retreat, I woke up really early one morning and really felt like God say, you need to reach out to your dad.
Wow.
And I said, I'm not calling him. And he said, write him a letter. And so I wrote him a letter and he got it. And the day before Thanksgiving that year, I got a letter back. And I was so brave, Tony, that I had my wife open and read it. and so she read it. And after she read it, she handed it to me. And she's like, I think you should read this. Mm. And so I did. And I actually still have that letter. And basically, it just said, all is forgiven. You know, give me a call sometime. There was more to it than that, but that was the gist of it. Yeah. And so the next morning was Thanksgiving. I woke up stinking early, irritated by that, and felt like God say, you're going to call your dad today. I answered audibly, no, I am not. And he says, no, you're going to call your dad today. And I'm like, hell no, I'm not calling him. and literally I paced around. I was irritated. I was angry. And so finally at about 11 o'clock, my wife said, what is up your butt today? And I just said, God told me I had to call my dad. And she was like, well, would you please do it? Because you're driving the rest of us crazy around here. And so, so I did, and I kept telling God, I don't want to call him because I don't want to talk to his wife who, you know, there was no love lost between us. And, so I called, he answered the phone, found out she had just gone to the grocery store. So he was home alone. Anyway, long story. We then, we talked on the phone. We made arrangements then to meet halfway between where we lived on neutral ground. He had not met his grandkids yet at that point. I have three kids. And so he got to meet his grandkids. We had some interaction, and we then made arrangements to actually go down to his place, spend a couple of days. A year later, I got a phone call one night from a private investigator that was looking for him. He eventually, I don't know, I didn't give any information, but he eventually found him. He was arrested. He stood trial in Wisconsin. He was convicted, and he went to jail. And that was the last I talked to my dad.
Wow. That's a lot. Thank you for sharing
it's
that.
A lot.
That's vulnerable. And so, you know, this may not be a fair question. So if it's too vulnerable, feel free not to answer it. How do you be a good man in the world today and the work that you've been called to? You know, you've led the company to millions, and sold it for millions. You've poured into people over the years. You've done all of the things. You're clearly living out your God calling. And you did so without any real example of what that would look like. I'm curious how you knew, how you managed to stay on the right path when the examples in your life might have suggested otherwise.
Grace and mercy, man. It comes down to grace and mercy. There's really no explanation beyond that. I will tell you this, that coming out of my depression, and it's an absolute miracle, quite frankly, that I'm even here today. But when I came out of that depression, my mom, the day that I was going to take my life, one miracle after another occurred that only God coordinated. And it started with, I actually went into my office, which I hadn't been in my office at that point in like 3 months. And I pulled out three pieces of paper and I was going to write three letters, one to my wife, one to my mom, one to my little brother. Not a single word got written because I had this fleeting thought that my parents, I knew, took a life insurance policy out on me. And so rather than calling, who was a lifelong friend of my mom's, by the way, rather than calling him, I drove to his office three blocks away, walk in his office unannounced. He happened to be in. I spent 10, maybe 15 minutes with him. I don't remember ever using the word suicide, but I was looking for a suicide exclusion to the policy. I left his office. By the time I got back to my office, my mom met me at the door and said, "Hey, let's go out for tea. And I'll drive," which we would go out for tea. That was not unusual. Her driving was unusual. And so got in her car. We're driving towards where we normally have tea. She turned on a different road. I'm like, "Where are we going?" And she said, "To see a friend." What I found out years later was that when I left my life insurance agent's office, he was a believer, by the way, he picked up the phone and he called my mom and he said, Jean, I know things are tough. I know you're trying to figure things out. I know things are a mess. None of that matters. I just saw your son. If you don't do something today, he won't be here tomorrow. She hung up the phone. She called the only other person she could think of that went through something similar. And that was this local businessman who was uber successful at this point. But he went through a time where he thought he was going to lose everything. And he went through a deep suicidal depression. And this is the man that she was taking me to see.
Wow.
Because when she called him, he happened to be in his office and he cleared his schedule. And he said, "Bring him right over." And so as we're pulling in his office, I say, I don't want to go in there. You know, I grew up with this guy's kids. All right. And I knew him only by reputation. Reputation was very successful, wealthy, powerful, and he scared the crap out of me. And so I didn't want to go in. And so she said, "Well, he thought you might say that. So he said he'd come sit in the car with us." So I went in. We spent 6 hours with him that day. Wow. Just kind of unpacked everything for him. At the end of that time, Tony, he never said, "I'll fix it." You know, he could have literally stroked a check and it would have been a rounding error for him to fix all of our problems. Instead, he just said, "I will walk with you through this." And he did. And it was that began my journey. He got me help. I needed professional psychiatric help.
Sure.
And he got me that. And so I was removed completely from everything for about 9 months. While I was out, he sent a team of people in to see what we had. Lo and behold, because of what happened, I was exposed. My mom was not. And so we were able to restart the company in her name, which he helped us do. In the meantime, I'm meeting with both a counselor. First, it was a psychiatrist, then a counselor, and then this businessman, and especially this counselor who was a pastor at one time who decided that God was calling to be a counselor instead of a pastor. I met with him weekly. I met with this businessman weekly, and I met with two other godly men in our community at least once a month. And I did that for 12 years.
Wow.
And it was these men that poured their lives into me. I wouldn't be sitting here today if it wasn't for the influence of these two men in particular, but really four in general. And that was the turning point in my life. These men really began to help me see God for who he truly was. I just didn't know it at the time.
Hey guys, just pausing this conversation with Matt to remind you to check out some of our incredible sponsors. Trent Bargy over at Elevate Real Estate. He's doing incredible things to help build the kingdom of God. And I love his heart for helping people find their forever homes. So if you're looking for an investment property, a vacation property, or something to call your next home, talk to Trent and his team over at Elevate today.
Speaking of homes, you're going to want to make sure that you check out myfivestarhomeservices.com. I absolutely love what they're doing over there. Christian and his team have a profit on purpose mentality. It's family owned and operated, and it's really all about leaning in to what it means to make sure that your home is ready for whatever God's going to throw at it. So HVAC, plumbing, or electric, myfivestarhomeservices.com is the place to go for all of your needs. So now let's finish up this conversation with Matt.
One of the things that I notice about leaders is that they don't often stay the course for an extended period of time. And one of the things that struck me about that story is that the 12 years really kind of lives out that scripture that says, don't give up meeting as some are in the habit of doing. What do you think the difference is between meeting in one season versus meeting in a long frame, intentional way, like the 12 years that you spent meeting with these guys?
Can you reframe the question?
Yeah.
So what do you mean a season?
What's the benefit if somebody's listening right now and they're like, well, I don't know that I have time to meet with someone for 12 years, right? That's a long commitment. That's a big, long commitment. What's the benefit of the long term versus the short term meeting?
Oh, wow. So I think in the long term, you can really do life. So I think it becomes iron sharpening iron, Proverbs 27. And I think that that can happen in shorter seasons as well. And so I do believe that there are relationships that are for a season, but then I think there are relationships that are for seasons of seasons. And I think that's those we need to be aware of and open to. Unfortunately, we live in a culture, you know, it's a very much a popcorn culture, instant gratification, and I want things now. And if I don't get it now, I'm going to move on. Well, it's those longer, what I have found over time is those longer relationships is where you begin to really develop enough trust in intimacy in that relationship where you can be vulnerable with each other and you can really mine the gold, if you will, in that relationship, especially when it's a mentor-mentee. Now, it's one thing when you're peer-on-peer. I think those are important as well. You have accountability, and I think there's a lot of wisdom. I have a friend was my best friend, and we're accountability partners. We have met at least monthly. We used to meet weekly, but our kids and life just happened. But we meet at least monthly, and we've done so for 22 years.
Wow.
And he's my accountability partner. And it's those kinds of relationships that you just cannot develop in a short season, from my perspective. Now, maybe there's ways you can do it, but I think that there is something about the long term that you just reap different benefits from, and you also give. So I think it's a mutual exchange.
Yeah, I'm really interested in diving into a little bit of how you began to change the culture at your company, right? Yeah, obviously you get back from getting the help that you need, and you're restarting the business now in your mom's, but you really led the business to kind of where it would become super profitable and able to be sold, and this journey. I imagine that there's a leader who's listening who wants to lead change. What are some of your thoughts on how to do that well?
Yeah, great question. When we restarted, it was just three of us. It was me, my mom, and a gentleman that served our family for 35 years. And over the course of 12 years, it grew to almost 200 people and revenue in many different locations. And quite frankly, if you'd have told me, hey, we're going to put together a strategic plan to map out where this thing goes from here to there, I would have never imagined what happened. I could not have planned for that. What happened was I was still young, so I was still in my 20s, right? I was 25 when this thing restarted. And here, as we began to grow and we began to hire people, I began to hire people that were sometimes double my age, experienced, seasoned, more knowledgeable than me. Well, I can't lead somebody double my age like I can lead a peer or somebody younger than me. And so I didn't know much about leadership. So yeah, I had a business degree. So what? You know, I went to school to get my degree. I went into business to get my education. And I really believe that.
Wow.
And so what I did, I knew I didn't know. I knew I didn't know enough about leadership to lead a growing company. And so I literally put together a list. And I think I had 30 or 34, 35 names on that list. And they were leaders in our region or maybe a little beyond, people that I could travel to within a day's reach. And I just started calling them. And I said, hey, can I buy an hour of your time? Can I buy you lunch? Normally it was just cost me lunch. I don't think I ever actually had to pay for an hour of time. But can I please have an hour of your time? I want to talk to you about leadership. And it was amazing to me, Tony, the people were willing to give me their time. And I don't think I had anybody tell me no. Maybe it wasn't like right then, maybe they were too busy then, but I think they all said yes. And when I met with them, I would basically ask them three different things. I'd say, give me your example of the best example of leadership that you've experienced in your own leadership, an example of how you failed in leadership and your leadership. Four questions. The third was, what questions should I be asking to develop my own leadership? And four, what book should I be reading? And people shared willingly and about their leadership journeys, both the good. And I also asked for a bad example so I could learn from both. And so that helped me grow as a leader. And it also helped me then as we began to grow and expand as a company, I began to learn the importance of empowerment, the importance of delegation, the importance of shared leadership. I just learned this intuitively. I know now you can actually read it from a book, but what I learned intuitively is that if I wanted to keep all the control with me, for the most part, my mom was great. I mean, she was wonderful at customer service and she basically just focused on that. Basically, she's like, hey, leadership, operations, strategy, you can take that. And so, but I knew that if we try to keep control, just the two of us, we were going to grow, this much. But if we could find a way to share leadership, to empower people to truly delegate, we could grow this much. And so just kind of by default, we began to share leadership, put together an executive team. We began to empower people in different areas and it just worked. And a lot of it, I can't even tell you it was not even that strategic. It just happened, but some of it just because I had to.
Wow. That's so good. I think one of the things that's interesting about your story is that you built this thing up and then you eventually sold it. But the depression never really, it came back. I'm wondering if you can kind of talk about that season of your life, that kind of over the, over time, it just never really went away.
Yeah. So what I've learned a lot about brain chemistry over the years and just a lot about how people are wired. So my natural wiring is, high drive. I tend to be high energy, go, go, go. And so what that tends to do for me is that I tend to overdo it. I can be naturally prone to burnout because I don't know when to say no and I take on too much. I've gotten a lot better as I've gotten older. I would naturally have these low times.
Yeah.
So I have been on a low dose antidepressant, ever since my big depression, just to try to help me keep a little bit of brain chemistry. And I'm not afraid to say that. I didn't tell this story that I'm telling you, Tony. I didn't talk about it for probably 15 years after it happened.
Wow.
I felt so much shame. People don't talk about mental health. They don't talk about depression. They especially don't talk about suicide. And so the couple times that I started to share my story with people, they didn't want to hear it. And so I thought, okay, that's taboo. Not going to go there. And then I was asked to share this story in 2000. So it actually been long. It had been almost 20 years. Almost 20 years after the event, I was asked to share my story at a business forum, and it wasn't even necessarily about mental health. But the organizer of the event had heard my story and said, I want you to share that at this forum. And so I did. And so there was it was a panel discussion. There were three of us. I talked about my story. These other two people talked about, I can't remember what they talked about actually. The audience then had open Q&A and all they wanted to talk about was mental health. And so, which told me, you know what? This is an issue. It's out there. And I think a lot of people are struggling with depression or feeling down, and a lot of it's caused by stress, anxiety, and those things, which is a natural thing. So for me, I've had to learn to manage it with, like I said, a low dose medication, but I've also managed it with, I make sure I get ample sleep. If I don't get at least 7 hours of sleep every night, I put myself at higher risk. If I don't exercise at least 5 days a week, I'm going to put myself at risk. And if I don't eat healthily, I'm going to put myself at risk. So those are three things that I know that I can control and I can take care of with me. I can't control what comes at me from the outside, but I can control at least how I regulate my inside and how I respond to it.
You've been very open in your storytelling and your writing. You've published two books, Unsatisfied and Unengaged. How do you know when the right time to share a story is in your life? Like, when's the right time to put it out there for the world to see?
Well, when I'm talking about a relationship, one of the things that I do in my consulting practice, if I have been brought in to work with a leadership team, for example, and they really want to work on team building, team unity, communication, whatever it is, one of the first exercises that I will do is I'll get them into a room and I will have them share their story. So, because I believe that I believe in the power of story. Mm. I believe that God has given each and every one of us a story. He's given me a story. He's given you a story. He's given your listeners a story. And there's something powerful that happens when you share your story that I think is very difficult to replicate any other way, especially if you're willing to be authentic, transparent, and vulnerable. Because it helps build trust and connection. So, you know, example, I just did this just a few months ago with it was a leadership team of a company. They have about, I think they have about 85, 90 employees. They have about 130 million in revenues. And they asked me to come in and spend a day with them and with team building for their executive team. And so I did. And so I walked in and literally the CEO pulled me aside at the beginning. He's like, okay, how do you want to tackle this? And I said, I want to start by your team sharing their story. And he said, what do you mean? And I said, I want you to share your story. And he's like, what, the story of the business? And I said, nope, your personal story. And I did not give any ahead of time. It doesn't always work this way, so I don't recommend doing it this way, but it just worked out this way. And he looked at me and he said, okay. And so we get into the group. And I said, okay. So the CEO turned over to me and said, okay, the agenda is yours. How do you want to start? And I said, I want the team to share their story individually. And I won't say his name, but I said, Mr. CEO, I said, I'd like you to go first. And he said, I've been thinking about that. He says, I want you to go. And I said, I'm not part of your team. He says, yes, you are. I want you to go. And so I did. So I went and I shared much of what I shared with you, Tony, a little bit ago with even more detail. And at the end of then the CEO went next and he shared his story. And then we went right around the room and there was, I think, 9 people in the room. There was laughter, genuine laughter. There were tears. There was connection like you would not believe. At the end of that time, the CEO pulled me aside with tears in his eyes. And he said, I have been wanting to get two of these guys on this team to open up to me for five years and one's been for like 15 years. And he says, I can never get them to share. He said, I learned stuff about them today I've never heard before. Mm-hmm. He said, this is amazing. I just heard from them 2 weeks ago. And the level of connection on that team, communication, openness, trust, listening to each other, compassion for each other has gone through the roof. And so to answer your question, I believe story, there's always time for story.
I love that. I love that. I imagine that there's somebody listening right now who's maybe for the first time in their life, they're leading something new, right? And they're stepping into a leadership role, and either they're the boss or they're the middle manager. What would you say to that leader who's newly placed, still has that new car smell, and is stepping into a job that they don't feel qualified for and is just so big and it's staring back at them right in the eyes? What's your wisdom for them?
I would say two, maybe three things. One, be real, be transparent, be vulnerable. Don't act like you know it all. If you don't know something, say, hey, you know what? I don't know the answer to that, but I'll find out. Admit when you make a mistake and be willing to say, you know what? I screwed up. I'm really sorry. Will you forgive me? So those are the two places I would start. And a third is surround yourself with people that can pour into you. So a mentor or whatever it is, if you're the owner of a business or you're in the C-suite, then I recommend either a board of directors or, in my case, I have a personal board. When I launched my business, I didn't want to do it alone, knew I couldn't do it alone, didn't want to do it alone, but I knew I also couldn't afford to pay people. And so I asked four people, one of them was my wife, if they would give me a half a day of their time every quarter. And so we meet every quarter. I don't pay them. These men love me and my wife, obviously. They love me. They care about me and my family. They want the best for me and they want the best for the business and they're willing to speak truth. Mm. And so I cannot emphasize how important that board has kept me moving in the right direction. It's kept me from going off the rails more than once. And it's also kept me from quitting. So more than once I've wanted to quit my own business and they won't let me. And so, if you can't find a board, at least have a person or two that you can have that kind of, you know, I'm struggling. I need help. Will you help me? You know, can I bounce something off of you? I need to vent, whatever it might be, that you can trust fully with you.
That's so good. Okay, I have one more question for you, but before I ask it, I know that the podcast family is going to want to connect with you all over the interwebs, pick up a copy of the book, do all the things, maybe bring you in to speak. Where's the best place to learn all things Matthew Q. Lesser?
Well, so you don't Google it because I don't know what Matt you'll find. My website is www.uniquelynormal.com. So the word uniquely and normal together in .com.
And of course, we'll link to that in the show notes. So if you need anything from him, he's actually pretty easy to find.
Yep.
Once you start at that URL. So, okay. Last question I love to ask people. It's an advice question. Except I get to name the season of life that you're in. And so I'm going to invite you to go back in time and give yourself one piece of advice. I want to take you back to the day before you walked into your father's office and he turned over the company to you. You're a young man. You're full of vigor and confidence, newly married. If you could sit down with that younger version of yourself, hold his hands, look him in the eyes, and give him one piece of advice about how to handle the journey he's about to go on. What's the one thing you're going to tell him?
Just one, huh? I would say don't do it alone. Mm. Don't do it on your own. Have somebody with you. Obviously, you know, and then surrender to Jesus, surrender to his calling on your life, and then don't go it alone. So many entrepreneurs, business owners, business leaders, you know, there's a reason why they say it's lonely at the top, because it often is. You don't know who you can trust. You don't know who you can talk to. But, you know, in this season of my life and what I'm doing now with my own business, I'm really trying to fight against that and say it doesn't have to be that way. You know, you said earlier in our conversation, you said that so many people start out strong, but they don't finish that way. I see the same thing. And I am passionate about doing whatever God allows me to do in the time that I have left on this earth to help leaders finish stronger than they started. Hmm. And I think it starts with acknowledging, guess what? I need God and I need others.
Yeah.
And living that out.
That's so good. That's so good, Matt. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for your willingness to be vulnerable and generous and transparent and for what you're doing for leaders all over the U.S. and especially in the Midwest. I love a good Midwestern guy. So thank you so much for your generosity today.
My pleasure, Tony. Thank you so much for the great conversation.
What a fun conversation with Matt. I deeply appreciate his vulnerability, the way he leaned into his story and didn't let it have the final say. I also really appreciate his tenacity for fighting for mental health, obviously something that you all know I'm passionate about as well. If you enjoyed this conversation with Matt today, let him know that you heard him here on the podcast.
connect with him on LinkedIn. It's a great way to see what God is doing in and through his ministry. And don't forget to sign up for our Life and Leadership newsletter. Every single week, we're putting out some of our best content on Wednesday mornings through our Life and Leadership newsletter. I'm so thankful for all of you and your willingness to build this community. As always, if you need anything from me, I'm embarrassingly easy to find at TW Milt, or go to Follow to Lead Podcast, follow the number 2 leadpodcast.com, follow the number 2 leadcoaching.com as well. Well, that's it for me today, guys. Look forward to bringing you a deeper dive episode later this week. And remember, if you want to follow Jesus, you must be willing to move.